Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You are listening to Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Jacob. This week we have a very special episode, and it's a little different than what we usually do. We are dedicating the full half hour to an interview with Nora McInerney. If you have not heard of her, she is the author of the book It's Okay to Laugh, Crying is Cool Too, as well as the host of the podcast Terrible Thanks for Asking, and the founder of a nonprofit called Still Kickin'. I sat down with her to talk about the podcast and writing and grief, which is a lot of what she spends her time talking about. I interned for Nora's podcast, and she is amazing and hilarious and so nice. And so without any further ado, here is my interview with her.
Also, I love that your dog is just laying under that couch. Did not bother to come out. Right here, right behind you.
There earlier, too. Yeah.
Oh, she's so anxious.
She's so anxious. I need to go pick up her Prozac, which is...
Journaled a lot.
It was. Oh, notebooks for everything. These are all notes for my high school boyfriend. Obviously, keep those. This meticulously details every aspect of our relationship.
That's amazing.
You know, documented for future generations. You never know. You never know who's going to want to read about... what you did in a movie theater, you know? You just do. Which kids don't have to, well, maybe they still do. And I'm like, you just didn't have anywhere to, like, hang out when you were kids,
you know? You'd have to have, like, your parents drop you off.
Yeah, oh, God.
Okay, I'm sitting straight.
All right, what are we talking about, Jaka?
We're going to talk about writing and sort of the community that's been kind of created after... your writing.
I like you. Do you like me?
Oh my God.
It's an actual note that says that.
That is... wow.
Yeah.
There's... but is there an answer on that?
There isn't an answer. Rude.
You never got the answer.
Never got the answer.
Why don't you tell me about your book?
About the book I published.
The book you published.
It is a book about falling in love with my husband, Aaron, and him being diagnosed with brain cancer and then dying 3 years later. So it's a funny book. But I think it actually is. And it's very different from the book that I had pitched, or like even the first draft of the book that I pitched, which was dismal. And I remember turning it in. My editor had been like, you know, why don't you just send me when you're halfway done? Just send me what you have so far. And I sent it and she was like, yeah, I hate this. Like, she was nicer about it, but, you know, she was like, do you think of yourself as a sad story? And I was like, no, I hate that. And I hate being pitied. Everyone hates being pitied. She's like, you wrote a pity story. She's like, you wrote, like, kind of the sad story that you think everybody wants to hear. And you wrote, like, what you thought people would want to hear if they'd, like, you know, read a part of your blog. Like, oh, gosh, like, you know... can you believe how sad this is? And obviously it's really, really, it's beyond sad when you lose somebody that you love, especially when you've, like, you know, decided to build a life with them. But, you know, it's not as if their entire life is just, you know, minimized into, like, the sad thing that happened at the end of it. So I started over and the deadline remained the same. And I really just wrote, like, the way that I thought about my relationship with Aaron and the way that I felt about my relationship with Aaron. And what came out was a book that's, you know, funny and sad because you, even after something really traumatic and tragic, like, you're still allowed and you still do experience, like, the full spectrum of human emotions, you know? You still laugh a lot. You still cry a lot. You actually I probably laughed more than I cried for the first year. And now I'm, like, you know, into, like, the third year of life after Aaron, and like now I feel like I can, like, the sad part can, like, sink in. That's my baby just coughing in your ear.
You have something to say?
Can you say hi? Hi.
Was it more difficult for you to write the sad version or the version that you actually published?
Oh, the sad version. I remember being like, really, really struggling even to get like the number of words that I had produced and hating what I had written, like really hating it and just being like, God, this is not even a book that I want to read. You know, being like, okay, then what? Okay, then what? Because I felt like I was like trying to mine for the sad stuff instead of just writing like what, like our relationship, like what was true about our relationship. Instead, I was just sort of.
Do you have
something to say? No hands. No hands. No, no, no. Here, water or milk. Drink your milk. People who love mouth noises will love this.
ASMR.
Very starting satisfying.
So you had been blogging for a while before you wrote the book.
Yeah, and I, you know, like the whole point of the blog was that. You know, I didn't want Erin to just be a sad story, and I didn't want it to be just about, you know, like, oh, medications and doctor's appointments. There's actually really very little cancer in the blog that I started about Erin, and about like our family. At first I'd been like, oh, it's, you know, a way to keep everybody updated on what's happening. But when I actually go back and read those posts, like there's very rarely any updates on what was happening to him medically, because honestly, Erin and I barely paid attention. Like we'd be in an appointment and the doctor would be like, no, this is a bad thing. We're like, oh, okay, good. You should just start with that, because otherwise we're just going to zone out. So, but those posts were really about like our lives, and it was really a way to like show the people around us, like whether they were strangers or whether they were, you know, our friends and family, who people have a really hard time with you going through a hard time, you know. And I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of people over the past couple years. I had one yesterday with a woman who I haven't seen since senior year of high school. We, you know, were reunited at a classmate's funeral, which we are too young for. And, you know, she was saying, I just didn't know, you know, I didn't think like you needed to hear from me. So I didn't say anything and I regret that. Dude. You know, but she didn't know what to say. And so she didn't say anything. And I didn't resent her for it at all. But I know that, that's hard for everybody. Like, we don't know what to say. We don't want to say the wrong thing. So we just don't say anything. Cause that's easier, you know, but it's also harder. Cause then we're like, oh God, should I have said something, or, you know? So it's all like, that part is very common. What was your question again?
I don't know. Oh, but okay. So to continue, like, do you think, does the book that you published, does it emulate more the blog?
Yeah, I feel like, but it's not, you know, it's not as if like it's just the blog copy and pasted into into a book at all, but I think it's more okay, that's what I was saying, is that when I look at the blog, it really is more about like our life than it is about cancer, and that's really what the book is about too. Is more about like all of those like complicated feelings that go along with a tragedy versus like a sad, like a chronologically sad story. Like boy meets girl, boy gets cancer, boy and girl get married and have a baby and then he dies, which are all elements to the story. Those are all facts. But when I wrote it that way, it just didn't feel true at all. Cause our life was so happy. Like a lot of the time I've thought, and I remember thinking, like, right after Erin died, like, oh, my God, those were the hardest years. But, like, I don't know if I'll ever be happier than that. Like, because things were so hard, but they were also so immediate. And so I really was not worried about the future because, I still had him and I had Ralph we had Ralph together. And, that seemed good enough. It just seemed like what we had was good enough. To ask for anything else would be, too much, like too selfish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then once the book was published, like what sort of reactions did you get immediately after?
That was like a really sort of complicated time in my life. When the book came out. So I had like a really, I mean, I had a really good reaction to that book. You know, I didn't know what to expect. I really honestly didn't have any time to like anticipate what a react. Like I didn't have, I think if I would have sat down and thought like, oh, this will be out in the world and people will be reacting to it, I probably would have had like, is this going to just be total hell to edit?
No, it'll be okay. Fine. It'll be fine. Honestly, we're dedicating just like a full like half hour to like, okay. An interview with you. So.
Oh God, and to screaming children in the background. So, you know, if I would have thought about it that way, and I think that's actually a good thing to say, like, which is that if I can never think about like the reaction that something will get, or I would not do anything. I would not even leave my house if I thought about like the reaction that anything I made would get in the world. So I didn't think about it at all. I really didn't seek out looking for anything or Googling anything. That said, what reviews do you think I remember? Do you think I remember any of the reviews that give me basically an average 5-star rating on Amazon? No. The ones that I remember word for word are the 2-star ones. All right? One from this woman, Dawn, okay, who I think since has changed her name on Amazon, who was like, I don't know. Just didn't, the story just wasn't that special. I was like, cool. I think I replied to that one too. I was like, okay, cool. When you write a story about your dead husband, I'll be sure to give you a review. I was like, not in a super mentally healthy place. I just had not considered anything. So it's like, it doesn't even matter. I'm like a normal person where it doesn't matter if 100 people say something nice to me. If one says something like borderline mean to me, I just take that as the truth. I'm like, oh, I'm just like a total piece of trash. Like I'm worthless. Like, cause Dawn C, you know, one of the women, I went deep in her reviews and I was like, she'd only reviewed 2 things on Amazon. One was a snow brush. She gave it 5 stars and wrote like a detailed review. The other was my book, which she gave 2 stars to. I was like, one, it's not mentally healthy for me to know that, to know her first and last name and the things that she's reviewed on Amazon. But I'm like, okay, a snow brush. Like I should look at that and just be like, wow, that snow brush company did a great job and good for them for getting this review. But all I can think of is like, what is wrong with me that I couldn't convince this woman who loves a snow brush to love my book? Like that's
also just like what compelled her to give a snow brush a review,
right? I'm like, so you're not an avid reviewer, but the 2 things you felt strongly enough about were this snow brush that exceeded your expectations and dreams. It has so little to do, by the way. It just, all it has to do is be a solid mass that can swipe off snow. And then my book, which disappointed you so much, you went and reviewed it. So that's a good, I sometimes can go back to that place mentally, but I'm like, I really don't want to. Mm-hmm. I really don't want to. But like you being like, oh, my roommate wanted you to sign my book. I'm like, okay, that's nice. I'm like, but does she know that Dawn didn't like my book?
I'll let her know. I'll be like, I was going to have Nora sign it, but Dawn didn't really like the book. Don't really think it's worth it.
I don't think you should. Yeah.
I actually, before I worked for you and before I started listening to Terrible Things for Asking, I worked at Barnes & Noble. Oh. And I was there the day that you had a signing. Did you do a signing at the mall?
Yeah, I did.
I was there that day. Yeah. And we had just like so many people coming in and like asking for your book. And I was like, what is this book? Like, and why is everybody looking for it? And we're like selling out of it. And I was like, I don't know what this is. And it's so funny that like years, because I remember that day. And then like years later, like I was like, oh, That's that book. Everybody was there for Nora.
Yeah, you're like, I'm in her dirty living room.
In her very cute house. Yeah. It's got like a lot of cool decorations.
Thank you.
The Hillary picture.
Oh, I know.
It's just my favorite.
So sad. I'd sent it out to be framed before the election and then came back. I was like, why? So I had to put it up, you know, as an investment.
Yeah, honestly.
It's an investment piece.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
So then when did, after you published the book, when did Terrible Things for Asking come along?
Great questions. Okay. Oh my God, why is this so hard? Okay, so I'd pitched Terrible Things for Asking a couple months before the book came out. So I was working on it. The book was already out of my hands at that point. But I knew that I was, you know, obviously NPR knew that I had a book coming out and that like I had, you know, the tragedy credibility to host the show. But the podcast came out of truly like out of my inbox, like writing that blog about Aaron. And then Aaron and I wrote his obituary together and it went viral. And so I just had this overwhelming and overflowing inbox of people who had read bits and pieces of our story and who were, you know, more often than not reaching out, not just to, you know, say, oh, you know, I'm thinking about you and what you've been through, but to tell something that had happened to them too, and to share something really, really personal and really difficult that they had been through, and often in really deep and personal ways. And they were, you know, they were emailing a stranger. They were emailing someone they didn't know, all these really personal things about their life. And that was happening so often. And I just was thinking, okay, all of these people are not friendless and familyless. That's not possible. But they all seem to have friends and family who don't feel able to talk about this topic, or think, you know, maybe it's over for them. Like, maybe it's just best left, you know, unbrought up, or like maybe they're afraid of saying and doing the wrong thing. And I knew that, you know, from personal experience, when you go through something difficult, it's just compounded by this loneliness. And I'm a person who knows a lot of people, but who is also so lonely after Aaron died. Like very few people to actually spend time with, and very few people to actually, who could sit with that discomfort and not try to just tell me it was going to be okay, or sit with me and pretend like nothing had happened, or like I really felt like most people were avoiding me. And if they weren't avoiding me physically, they were definitely avoiding me emotionally. And, you know, for my part, hell of a lot of anger over Aaron dying, like a lot of misdirected anger, had not really dealt with anything, was actively avoiding dealing with things. But I really wanted...
Mom, I need help.
With what? Fruit Ninja?
Yeah.
Okay, can I do that later?
No.
I can help you.
Okay.
Yeah, let Dad play. He's so good.
It's really hard. There's two sides. You can be red. I'm already blue.
Yeah, that's the two-player mode.
Oh, good. Ha-ha. Two players.
Bring it over there.
Okay, but I don't want to miss any of my loops. Now look, this game got you.
So funny. We just started that game yesterday. It came out when he was a baby, and I played it all the time on our Xbox Connect. I'd put him in like the baby Bjorn and just be like whipping my arms around. Like, it's like, you're home with a baby. What are you going to do? Just strap him on and play some Fruit Ninja. That was so fun. That was the best maternity leave. I knew that. I knew it was super lonely, and even reading like old blog posts or reading like old Instagram posts, like I was writing really pointed things, like directed to people, being like, please do better. Cause I just did not have the capability to say to people, this is really hard and I need you to do this. Cause I'd never done this before. And the thing is, like, none of us have ever done these things before. It's always like tragedy makes us all like first timers. And I say that as a person whose husband died of cancer. And last night I was at a funeral for a classmate, a high school classmate who had died of cancer, you know, talking with his mother, talking with his wife, and feeling like just as completely emotionally inept as anybody there, you know, just like, oh yeah, I can just offer you the knowledge that this sucks. This is the worst and I'm sorry. And you threw a great party. So I don't know. I just got a lot of those messages, and it wasn't all cancer. It wasn't all dead husbands, but just knew there were a lot of people in the world who were going through something really difficult, who felt very alone and who were hurting and who wanted to feel heard. And I had a way of sort of forcing people to hear me, never the right people, but like just people in general, but you know, by having a blog, by having an Instagram account that I think at the time, like 3,000 people followed. So it felt very big. And, you know, I just wanted to create that for other people and create something that could make it like easier for people to feel heard, and easier for people who are like adjacent to tragedy to like just have a starting point. And I think most of the episodes have done like a good job of that. Like, you may not go through this specific, really singular story, but something in it will resonate with you, and you can take it to somebody and be like, it feels like this. Mm-hmm. Like, you should listen to this. It feels like this. Your sister's story is like that for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, like this. This is what it's like.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Have there been, like, episodes of Terrible Things Fasting that have been particularly hard for you to, like, record and make?
Yeah, there's one called A Henry Sky, and I'm interviewing a woman named Colleen, and she is recounting for me the stillbirth of her baby, her full-term baby. And at the time of interviewing her and recording her, I was pregnant, like secret pregnant, like pregnant and so filled with anxiety. Like, I hadn't told anybody that I was pregnant, including Hans, who is my producer, who just let me get kind of, you know, I guess fat and just never brought it up because he's such a gentleman, you know. And when I think I brought up, it was like 7 months in. He was like, okay, I had been wondering, it's fine. What's going on? All right. Like, he's just so emotionally just fluent, you know? Yeah. Stable. He's a stable person. And so I was listening to her basically, and I'd lost a pregnancy at 12 weeks, which is painful and also very different from giving birth to a full-term baby and holding it in your arms and naming him. And she was just basically describing my nightmare. And I was also thinking, like, oh my gosh, how lucky am I that I'm pregnant, and how sad that I'm not happy to be, even though I am happy to be. But I'm also just so depressed and anxious that I just can't feel anything. And I know that's a bad sign. Like, I know that's a bad sign. And I think pretty soon after that, I went to my OB and was like, I think that I need to be on something right now, even during this pregnancy, or I'm going to be a woman you read about in the newspaper. So that one stands out to me. And when it came out, I remember Colleen sent me a message and she was like, oh my God, you were pregnant when we recorded that. I was like, yeah, I was. And I wanted to tell you, but also you feel so shitty telling someone who isn't pregnant and is lost to have pregnancy that you're pregnant, even though, you know, they may not hate you for it. But that's what I mean. Like, we're all struggling with these things and how to talk about them. And so am I, even though it is literally my job to talk about them. So,
And so as a part of, like, Terrible Things of Asking, you guys have, like, your donor club called the Terrible Club. Mm-hmm. And, like, I've been a part of that Facebook page since I was interning. And, like, people just, like, really share their heart with mm-hmm. complete internet strangers. Mm-hmm. So you've really, like, created this community of people who, like, feel comfortable, like, talking about grief and being like, wow, this really sucks. What does that, like, feel like for you when you sign on and, like, look at everything everybody's saying?
Yeah, I don't go. I have severe attention issues, like, just in life. So I have to have a blocker on my computer from, like, fun internet. I really do. That's how I get my work done. So when I go on, when I allow myself, it seems odd to say, like, oh, it's such a treat. It's such a treat because I have, you know, I have the Terrible Club, I have the Hot Young Widows Club, and then I have Still Kick In, which is a nonprofit that I run. And the things that they have in common are that they are all groups of people who have gone through something and who care about other people and are really open to hearing about the experience of other experiences of other people without judging or trying to fix it. And I don't know, it feels unbelievable to me because I was so lonely and I was so hesitant. There was not a single group in the world that you could have convinced me to join when Aaron was sick or when Aaron was dying at all. And I remember, I think I'd even written something, like, on the blog. I'm like, I'm not trying to join any club. My club is me and Aaron and the people who already know us. That's it. That's the only island I'm willing to be on. And without Aaron, like, that did not leave me much. And my group sort of formed around me. The Hot Young Widows Club was me and my friend Mo Richardson, and we only met because our husbands were both dead. Our husbands hadn't met each other. We had not met each other, but people were like, oh God, you gotta meet Mo. And we did, and it, like, clicked immediately. And, you know, Mo and I, having both written about our husbands' deaths, like, tended to attract a lot of younger widows, and we ended up making it into a little secret Facebook club as well, that's really specific to partner loss. It doesn't have to be your husband or your wife. It could be your boyfriend, your girlfriend. It's not all straight ladies. It's this huge, like this spectrum of romantic relationships that can be lost via death. But the Terrible Club is really special because we started this podcast having no idea if anyone would listen to it. Honestly, the agreement with APM was that we would make a pilot, which Hans and I did, and then from that, that we would get to make 10 episodes. So when that 10th episode was done recording, there was no agreement to have made more, you know, and so I didn't know for actually a long time if we were even going to make more. Everybody who's in that group, which is now like 500 maybe, it's kind of a lot of people, like are all people who, like I never imagined that 500 people would listen to my podcast. Like that's what I mean. Like I don't have any context when I do something of like how it will be. I didn't even know what like good statistics were for having made a podcast. Like if you would have told me like 500 is the most you could get, I'd be like, that's a lot. Turns out that's not, you know, but seems like a lot to me. They're not all related to me. So those are 500 or so people who listen to the show regularly and then who also care enough to like make it happen. You know, like that's the public and public radio, which I mean, is kind of like everybody's least favorite time is like member drives, right? Like I actually like secretly kind of love it because I love just like people are so good at it. I got to do it once on NPR. I was never asked back. I was never asked back to All Things Considered for some reason. I don't know. I went a little off book, but I thought I spiced it up. I think listeners maybe had a different opinion. I don't know. Spicy. I was not asked back. I can't speculate as to why I thought I did a great job. But like, it is really cool. Like that has a huge impact on the show getting made is like actually having public support for it. So that's really cool.
I love member drives. Whenever we do them at Radio K, we call them pledge drive. I don't know. I like love talking about like the radio station I love. I'm like, it's so good. Just give us some money, please.
Yeah, give us some money. Yeah. I'm not like, I don't feel like particularly talented at it, but I even like, I do like listening to them. But I'm also a person who, I was raised by a man who wrote infomercials, so I just love a good pitch. Mm-hmm. You know, I just love it. I'll listen to anything. I'll listen to commercials. I love it. I love radio commercials.
Yeah, and when you get Kathy Werzer and Carrie Miller on air together, it's just magic.
It's truly my heaven. I have like this weird like dream where in like 5 years we're like all like we plan our vacations together. I don't know why 5 years. It seems like a 5-year plan to me. I don't want to rush it. You know, I don't want to rush it. We're on a first name basis now. It seems like step one. Do I still call them Kathy Werzer and Carrie Miller? Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah. I worked what with else them all would summer, you? Full time.
You're still like, Kathy Werzer, how are you? That's what I say when I see her. I know they're both just the most just incredible human creatures. We should basically have like a celebrity magazine that's just about public radio people.
I honestly love that because I love Bob Collins more than anybody in this world.
Bob Collins Appreciation Podcast. That man, I love Bob Collins. He used to watch my baby so I could record a podcast. Bob Collins.
He's so amazing.
So smart. Like an incredible writer. God, he's awesome. He's awesome. Also, just always on the right side, I gotta say.
Yeah, politically minded in an amazing way.
Yes, yes. Smart. Like, I'm, like, politically a little knee-jerk, I'll be honest. But Bob Collins is fair, and so when he validates one of my opinions, I'm like, and it came from Bob, okay?
Yeah.
And Bob said I'm fine, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever anything, I feel like with all the Me Too movements, whenever mm-hmm. Bob writes about those, I'm always like, share. I'm like, Bob Collins said it, so you can't argue it.
Yeah, don't even, okay? Because Bob Collins did a thoughtful post about it, not like my sort of ranty, a little off-topic one. So listen to Bob. Yeah, Bob Collins is awesome.
So then, because I obviously I entered for you guys, and reading through submissions can sometimes be emotionally draining. How do you handle reading through these submissions or like even doing all these interviews?
Yeah.
And how do you stay like emotionally sane, or like do you have to like detach yourself from the story at all, or
like in a way, you certainly do. I think that, so I'm not a doctor, but I was interviewing this physician this past week. And it was like, we had back-to-back interviews. So all the stories are super tragic, but I was talking to this physician and, you know, she was like, well, this is, you know, she'd been through a really intense situation. She's like, you know, I've seen, you know, I've had a lot of patients die in my care, and you'll have a patient die in your care, and then you go into the next room and you take care of the next one, which sounds almost, I mean, it made sense to me, right? Like, you just keep doing, you know, your job because your job is your job. My job is not to, like, take care of people and prevent them from dying, but, like, my job is to, like, really, like, see people at their worst and then to, like, do my best to take care of them in an interview and to take care of the listener and then also to make sure that, like, I don't have a mental breakdown again and that also I don't, like, that I'm not so drained that I'm not, like, a good person for my family, which has happened before. Like, you know, this last season was really, really hard on everybody. We just did not have enough support. I was not at my best, like probably emotionally. And it was just hard. And I wasn't like good to anybody, you know, like anyone in this house was not like super fun to work with. And so like I have learned, I think, how to take care of myself better. And I think I told myself before, like, well, I've been doing it for so long, like, it doesn't even really like affect me. But like, yes, it does. Like, of course it does. I think it would be weird if it didn't. And it wouldn't be the right job for me if it didn't affect me. But I definitely have, I don't think it's like, I don't know if it's necessarily a detachment, but like, I can read something and interact with it. And in a way, I guess it's detachment, but detachment is not like negative or positive. Like, that's the point of detachment. Like, is that it can just be what it is. And so it doesn't necessarily like, you know, ruin me, but there are definitely interviews that I've done that are, harder than others or that like, just like sit with you harder than others. And it can just, you don't know when those will be. Like, you don't know just based on the story, you have no idea. And this week I had, you know, back-to-back dead husband stories, and there's nothing about them that were like my husband dying at all. But there was something about like the women and about the men that we were talking about who had died, that totally reminded me, you know, of Aaron and totally reminded me of like that time, like right after he died and what I was like. And, I didn't expect that to be hard, but I just like got in my car, drove 40 minutes home, just cried the whole way. So,
gotta let it out somehow.
Yeah, it's gonna come out somehow. And if you don't like let it out slowly, then it comes out like me tucking Ralph in and like yelling at him because he's being 5 and not going to bed and, you know, so.
And that is the end of the interview. I am admittedly awful at ending interviews in a way that makes any sense. But thank you so much to Nora. It was great talking to her and getting to sit down and be in her house and meet her family. It was wonderful. Thank you so much for listening to Real College Podcast. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K. It's produced by Alex Schumacher, Emily Allen, and Liv Riggins. I'm your host and managing editor, Jake Maldonado Medina. Thank you so much for listening, and make sure you tune in every Monday at 6:30 for more arts and cultural coverage.